handle the truth.
Should we or should we not follow the advice of the galactically stupid?
Maybe. Maybe not. Maybe fuck yourself.
You're all a bunch of fucking assholes. You know why? You don't have the guts to be what you want to be. You need people like me. You need people like me so you can point your fucking fingers and say, that's the bad guy.
Clearly, don't know who you're talking to, so let me clue you in. I am not in danger, Skyler. I am the danger. A guy opens his door and gets shot, and you think that of me? No. I am the one who knocks.
Welcome everybody to episode blah 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 of the Righteous Brick Podcast. I'm your host JL Covan. It's 12:15 p.m. on February 1st in the year of our Lord 2021. I just deleted a 40-minute episode that I just recorded because I just felt like it wasn't good. It was too depressing. But to cut to the chase, basically what I did was I said that The Little Things on HBO Max was a fucking atrocious movie, and that I think we're going to be at a point 10 years from now where we're reevaluating Rami Malek's entire career and wondering, A, was Bohemian Rhapsody the most absurdly over-nominated, over-rewarded movie in Oscar history? And other than a bug-eyed weirdo in Mr. Robot, which he was very good at, is there range? Because he was certainly atrocious as a detective. And the movie was just, you know, he had heroin-addicted Jesus Christ with a paunch, played by Jared Leto, who definitely... saw the chance to work with Denzel and was probably like, I'm going to fucking bring it. I'm going to go toe to toe with Denzel. I'm not going to back down. I'm going to be right there with him. We're going to be right there toe to toe. And this is the one I'm going to tell my kids about. And it's, as usual, kind of cartoonish shit that he produces. He's like a parody of a method actor, I feel like, Jared Leto. Maybe because he came up as such like a pretty boy that he really like in his mind has to just feels like he's got to be the most invested and the most intense of anybody on the cast. And then Denzel, I would just say, what are you doing, buddy? Why are you in this movie? It's terrible. But anyway, that was my review of that. And then I just talked, you know, as I usually do, rambling about comedy and how it's not fulfilling and it's not making me happy. And I thought, that's not what the people come to Righteous Prick for. Or is it? Maybe it is. But I joked about how I've been very rough. I'll start with this because this actually was funny. And we'll make this a short one because much like stand-up comedy and social media and everything else in my life, this podcast is something I really don't want to do anymore. But I said, I think some of my fans have become, I don't want to say jarred or I don't want to say offended is not the right term, but they're sensing some hostility to me. Basically I give off a drill sergeant and Full Metal Jacket energy to my fans at this point. Which is fine. I assume that's how my career will end. You know, in some green room, the equivalent of a private pile will blow my brains out, and I'll go out like Selena, you know. Except for the fact, you know, and just like Selena, the person that plays me in the movie will be way more famous than I ever was. Hey guys, Jennifer Lopez played her in the movie. I know I have to give cultural context and pop culture clues because I have the weirdest mishmash of fans in the world, and I appreciate you. And it's called tough love, guys. It's called tough love when I'm mean on social media. But you know, it's not you guys. It's me. It's the frustrations of a career that hinges on social media interaction and placating a broad swath of the community, which is not what I want to do, because the broad swath of the community is generally a broad swath of stupid. You know, and that's what succeeds. I have seen such one-note mediocre content explode this year. And I think one of my problems on social media this year was trying to show what a diverse performer I was, because as it turned out, for every person that said, do something other than Trump, there were 20,000 people who were like, give us more Trump, give us more Trump. And had I maintained an account that was simply Trump videos, Trump negativity, as much as it may seem like that to some people, it really isn't. I've spent an inordinate amount of time trying to promote other impressions, my volume, my catalog of stand-up albums, normal jokes, and the occasional social commentary and the you know, relatively frequent Trump videos. But I think had I just stayed a one-note performer, I think my numbers would have kept going up. They would be like, this is the guy they really like for anti-Trump comedy. And that's all he does. He just, here's a video, Trump sucks. Here's a video, Trump sucks. And it would have made me a shitty performer, a one-note performer, and it probably would have helped my stats keep growing on Twitter. But you guys, I joked, I said, this is going to end with me having like only 300 comedy fans left, but by then they will be like the army in 300. Just a highly tuned, efficient, vicious, knowledgeable comedy army backing me up, because they will have been forged in the fire of my Twitter anger and condescension. When you post a bad joke on my thread, you will get an angry response. When you question an objectively good joke because you are lacking in the knowledge to understand the joke, you will be given no quarter. Okay? So basically, I plant my comedy army within a year will be like 300. Like, they will be the best group of comedy fans in the world. And they will be so small that they will be conquered by the Persian army of fucking Jay Leno lip-syncing morons. But we will fight strongly and we will fight bravely. And when somebody walks up to this podcast and says, this is depressing, I will look at them and go, depressing? This is comedy! And give them a foot in the chest. Okay? So that's what I'm forming here. If my career is not destined to be what I want it to be, and I think we all know that actually is the fucking path we're on, at least my comedy fans who survive will be some of the greatest comedy fans in the world. It's also very funny when the Righteous Girlfriend is doing a hit workout in the bedroom, and Cookie insists on going into the bedroom with her, and then it sounds like she's being attacked, because when she's on the ground, Cookie tries to bite her hair. So it sounds like a lot of fun is going on in the bedroom right now. But anyway, guys, tea break. But the sad thing is, I've got like 1,200 listeners of Righteous Prick, which is double what it was a year ago. Unlike the growth to the Trump podcast, which was well over 1,000%, mine was a 100% increase. The Trump podcast at its high point had an increase of, what is it when you go from like 700 listens to 20,000, whatever that is. Now we're down to like 13,000 consistently, which is still very strong. But this podcast has 1,200, and the toughest thing will be, you guys are already in sort of elite company. You've listened to me, stuck with me through this real deep inner journey of why I hate comedy and people. And yet, 75, by my math, for you to join JL Leonidas's comedy army, 900 of you, 75% of you still won't make that cut. And that's going to be the one that's tough. That'll be the cut that's very tough for you guys. So I appreciate you all making it this far. You are an elite company. But those numbers, I think, tell you everything you need to know about my comedy as sort of almost a control group. You know, the Trump podcast growth was astronomical based on the Trump impression. And then if you want to see what my growth was in terms of non-Trump comedy fans who are interested beyond the Trump, my regular podcast doubled in listens. So that sort of tells you, I think, roughly, you can sort of gauge from that what my fan base really is. And it's people who enjoy, you know, I feel like it's always sort of sad when you feel like so many of my fans probably don't even grasp the depth of the humor in the Trump videos. They just sort of take it for granted. And those are the people who will say, do a Joe Biden now, because they aren't really processing the talent. They're just saying, do more voices, do other voices, because you're a voice. You do voices. So do a Biden, like, without even a consideration into the skill and difficulty it takes to master an impression. So that's like double fuck you from fans who don't know that they're saying fuck you. But, you know, like I've said, I sold a shit ton of Trump albums and I sold less than 20% the same number of stand-up albums in the last year. Okay, so that's still good. That's still a big improvement over pre all this. But, you know, that's the difference. My Trump podcast increased listeners by, I don't know, fucking 2,000%. You do the math. I don't know. I'm probably off, but let's say 1,400%. This improved by 100%. Still good, but also tells you, you know, that those are sort of control groups, you know, non-scientific control groups that tell you that's probably where your real fan base is. Now, does that mean when I'm performing live, maybe more people will come out and see me? Probably. I think that's probably fair to assume. But I need to, I think I need to start planning for a life after comedy, because there is nothing in my life that makes me happy right now. And I think comedy is a big reason for that. This isn't, please, by all means, do not email me or message me with a, you got to stick with it, or I appreciate you, JL. It's okay. I get it. You're listening to this. You have my respect and appreciation for making it this far. But my God, I don't know how to deal with how stupid the general population is. It wouldn't matter to me if I was just a lawyer and I was just going to the movies and reading books in my spare time and going to the gym. But my work as a comedian is constantly confronted, because I can't go to comedy clubs where at least you get like two dumb comments a weekend from people. You know, like when people go, I love that Adam Sandler joke, and I have to bite my tongue in person. Although I haven't always, but where I go, oh, you like the joke about my face. What about the other 28 and a half minutes I performed? No, just the face joke really stuck with you. Get the fuck out of here. That's what I'm thinking. People are like, the Adam Sandler joke was so funny. I'm like, wow, you're a fucking idiot is what I think of people who say that. I'm sorry. It's just like, but you don't say it to be, I'm not trying to hurt people's feelings. It hurts my feelings. It hurts my feelings to know, okay, so like I wasted my time up there. Like I could have been 90% shittier as a comedian and you would have been totally fine with the show. That's what hurts, because I care. And that's what social media feels like. It's like instead you're getting so many of those people that never go to comedy clubs and love the simple jokes. And I don't know. I had somebody reach out to some agents for me finally. I just bit the bullet and said, yeah, I need to be proactive about this. No responses yet. And that, of course, I have to wonder. I've seen everybody who blew up in the last year get representation. Blow up. When I say blow up, I mean in terms of like my level or more. And you just start to wonder, like I was of course yelling at my girlfriend this weekend, not yelling to her, I should say, not at her. But I was just like, I genuinely don't know what else I would have to do to just even get a meeting, a phone call, a Zoom. And that's, you know, very despairing, because then I think to myself, well, I'll do it myself. I will do it myself. And I had a friend say to me, why are you so interested in getting a platform to host a stand-up special or a sketch hour for you? Why not just put it out there to your audience, which has grown very large? And I said to him, I said, well, there's two reasons. If I get on a Netflix, a Showtime, an HBO Max, a Hulu, blah, 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 then the people who watch that, who don't know me, will be watching because they either like sketch comedy, if it's a sketch comedy hour, or because they're interested in stand-up comedy. And I am confident that if it is a self-selecting group of stand-up fans or sketch comedy fans, I will win. That's the funny thing about my own audience. They have proven to me, partly because of who they are and partly because of social media algorithms ramming me dry in the ass, that I can't trust them to embrace or to even see what I'm producing. Because I think had I been, and I already forgot if I said it on this episode or on the one I just deleted, had I been, Cookie, you got to chill the fuck out. Cookie is very annoying. I know everybody loves the pictures, but she is a, it's not always easy dealing with a rescue dog that doesn't like you at all. But the fuck was I talking about? This is already a fucking drain, right, folks? It's a drain for me to talk. But now I look at my audience and I say, the social media algorithms aren't showing it to you, and you don't seem to be a sophisticated comedy audience. I mean, the MyPillow sketch this week on Saturday Night Live was a fucking piece of dog shit. I did one on Friday that fucking destroys it on every level. And then I go to YouTube, I see, oh, mine had 16,000 views as of like a day and a half, and the one on SNL after a day. Of course, I'm not saying it should be equal, but had a 1.6 million. And in my head, I'm just like, yeah, because people, it's just, it's fame, it's who you recognize, it doesn't even matter. Do you really need a great impression? Do you just have to kind of make fun of stuff that people are already making fun of? You know, that's why callbacks do so well in stand-up comedy, because they make the audience feel smart. And I remember somebody saying that early on. And I remember in my, Craig Ferguson said, I was very proud of the callback I had, because it was a fucking gangster callback in terms of how hard it hit. But callbacks are really about making the audience feel like, I get that. I remember that. Do you remember that? I remember that. Even if it's not the funniest line, it's this affirming pat on the back to the audience that they got it. And I'm starting to really feel that way. I see people promoting different social media, quote unquote, characters. And good God, I did one character this year, and I even put it in parentheses, like, I am not actually making this a character. I believe that character comedy, for the most part, is a lazy, easy cop-out. And if you see, and I remove my social media buddy Brent Terhune from this, because I actually do enjoy his shit, and he was the first of this batch to arise. But I see people putting up stuff, and it's almost like I'm going, okay, so basically, as long as you're just making fun of Christians and MAGA, you can be very repetitive and people will call you a genius. And I'm out here risking my dome just for a ducat, or wait, just for a bucket or a fast ducat, just to stay alive. Yo, I gotta say, fuck it. I kept thinking, and this has been my whole career, I keep thinking, if you perform it, they will come. If you give it, they will come. And it's, for me, it's about like, look at these 20 impressions I've done. Look at this original writing. Look at this. Look, as you try to pigeonhole me as Trump, all you have to do is look and see that I'm offering you so much more. Plus, check out these albums. And I realize, I don't know if people want all that, which is weird to say. Like, I don't know if people want varied, good, strong comedy. I think they want easily accessible stuff. Like, I think, and I'm not talking about Dennis Miller level shit where I'm like, huh, well, it's almost as like 19 different references to Kant, Schopenhauer, Hegel, the Renaissance, and, you know, the 12th disciple. I'm just saying, like, what I put out there takes a lot more, whatever. I'm doing that thing where I toot my own horn because I'm frustrated. But I'm saying this because I genuinely don't think it's worth the time or effort or stress anymore. And maybe that'll change when I can book some live gigs. But at this point, without an agent or manager, am I booking anything outside of the clubs that have like that I have long-standing relationships with? Probably not. Which then means I might as well not leave a job if I'm only going to get like 9 weeks of headlining work a year. Not to burst your bubble, but that just means I'm a more successful feature in terms of my finances. Which means keep the day job, which means maintain this double work life into your 40s, which is what I said I did not want to do. But so far I've had, a friend reach out to some agents for me and no calls, no meetings, no Zooms, no nothing. So I'm not even talking about getting signed. I can't even get a reply. And I don't, you know, you just start to wonder. You're like, I don't get it. But, you know, maybe I need to stop trying to get it. And my fear is that, like I said, you know, my friend was like, well, why don't you just do it yourself? You've got the platforms. And I go, I don't know if I do. I don't know if I, like when I put out a killer stand-up clip on YouTube from one of my Zoom shows. By the way, there's two Zoom shows in February. One is Trump, one is stand-up. We'll see how those sell. I'll put the link in the bio, but I did it last week and very few people bought. Once again, not a guilt trip. If you don't want to go, be yourself. Be yourself. If you just like listening to me for free, I appreciate it. That's fine. But I'm just like, I still hold out this faint hope of cultivating an actual stand-up comedy fan base and not just people who sort of liked me because I made COVID feel 2% less fucking awful. Even though I respect that and appreciate my role and whatever role I played in your life, if I gave you some respite or some joy or some happiness during a terrible time for everybody, you know, my career ambition is not to be Mr. Rogers of 2020. It's to be a working, successful stand-up comedian, possibly sketch actor as well. But yeah, I don't know. I just can't get like I think about producing it, and you want to know my biggest fucking nightmare. And maybe we should just end with this. I'll call the episode my biggest fucking nightmare. My biggest nightmare is that I say, okay, I got all this money saved up. Okay, I can spend $20,000 producing and $25,000 producing a TV quality stand-up special, and I can spend another $25,000 putting together an In Living Color Chappelle Show level sketch hour special, either as a pilot or a standalone. So now I've spent $50,000. Why don't we go crazy and say $100,000? No, I'm still fine financially. I've still got plenty of savings thanks to a killer year. I still have a day job that pays me regularly and gives me benefits. I have a roof over my head. Everything's okay. It's not the loss of money that would kill me. It's that when I don't sell those specials, okay, when nobody buys them, for whatever reason, they're like, yeah, you're technically a minority, you're technically a person of color, but we don't feel like you're a person of color enough for us to give a shit. We have to throw you into a pot A. You don't count as our diversity pot B. Whatever, Matt, you're 41. We want somebody 32. You are too aggressive. We're looking somebody more alternative. You're any number of things that our agents or our platform is not looking for right now. Okay. So then I say, well, fine, I'll show them. And then I post to YouTube, check out JL's comedy sketch hour pilot. And then I tune back a week later and it says 11,000 views. And it says, you have made $77 from advertisements on this. Congratulations. And then I post a stand-up special, because I posted a stand-up clip, the Holy Water versus Purell bit, which I referenced on this podcast. I posted that over a week ago. It hasn't hit 5,000 views yet. When I tell you that this is one of the 10 best bits I've probably ever done, it's one of the 10 best bits I've ever done, I think. I think it is at that level. It is at that thoughts and prayers keep my enemies closer level, closing type bit. And there's a lot of good stuff I'm working on, but that bit seemed to shine through the most. And that tells me, out of my 64,000 YouTube subscribers on that channel, 5,000 haven't even watched it. And I guarantee some of those people watching it aren't subscribers. So you're talking about like somewhere between 3-5% of my subscribers have even watched a 4-minute stand-up clip, but you think they're going to give, maybe a full special has more cachet. Maybe people go, oh, we got to check that out. But if my Twitter algorithms and my YouTube algorithms aren't even showing it to my own followers and subscribers, well, then I'm losing out on maybe that half or quarter of my fan base that might be interested. And then I post a special that cost me $25,000 or $30,000 to make, 17,000 views after a month. I'm just giving you like the hypothetical nightmare where you're going, okay, so I posted it, I paid for it, I put my heart and soul into it, it's great, but it's not even being seen by the people who are quote unquote fans. Forget reaching a broader audience. That's the nightmare, is where you go, well, my own fans aren't watching it and sharing it. So then what was the point of having this fan base? And what was the point of producing this and saying, I'm going to take it over, I'm going to own it myself? So I would like an agent and I would like a platform to host my stuff, because I feel like, as weird as it sounds, being presented to a group of strangers who like stand-up has been what I've done for over a decade. And I think I mentioned this last week. I'm featuring for this Def Jam act this week, and then this blue-collar comedy tour guy the next week, and then next month I'm with this mainstream big-time star, and then the next week I'm hosting for Sebastian Maniscalco. And so I'm hitting every type of crowd, and I'm killing at like, you know, a 98% rate. So strangers who like comedy if you turn on a stand-up special, I bet you I'm going to do well with you. Not a guarantee, but I would bet that I would do well with you. But if you are in my fan base and you came to me for Trump videos and COVID boredom, I'm less sure of you than I am the stranger who actively seeks out a stand-up special. So I'm in this a conundrum of sorts, which is I have this fan base, and many of them I enjoy and they like what I do, but many of them don't see what I do or don't care about what I'm doing, or both. And I need to use those numbers, which are real. I built that fan base myself through nothing but luck and good content. I need to use that fan base numbers to get me to a fan base that will be more receptive and more interested in what I'm actually doing, which is so weird. But yet I can't get a meeting, a phone call, or an email from an agent. And this is once again, this is just your JL update on his career. I already forget if I made this joke on this. I said, my fan base, I'm developing a fan base. Yeah, I think I already made that joke. I'm sorry for having brain farts, but I'm in a fog. I'm Jack Nicholson in The Shining at this point. I might as well just go sit out in my building's parking lot and freeze in the snow, and let's just end this the way the movie ended. But I don't know. It's I compared myself to the drill sergeant in Full Metal Jacket, and yeah, blah blah blah, with my own fans. But it's, I don't know, guys. It's. I think maybe I do need to pause this podcast because I'm not even coming up with new complaints. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not even coming up with new things to bitch about, or it's the same, and it might be getting repetitive for you guys. It certainly feels repetitive for me. I might have just repeated myself on my own episode, but I don't know. I'm going to make a new album, but it's just setting me up for disappointment when, like, hey, you made a new album. Guess what? You sold 419 copies. Okay, well, that was good enough to make me number one on iTunes for 2.5 days. But that's it. So, I don't know. I got to get back to my day job now. I just drank my tea. I think I'm going to, instead of having nuts, I think I'm going to have some pita chips. How about that? Live a little. But the weather outside is frightful. And on this podcast is anything but delightful. Let it go, let it go, let it go. That's not me talking about life. That's just me talking about comedy. But, you know, yeah, I have a couple more shows in February, and then I'm done. I'm done prostituting myself to try and get people to come to Zoom shows because it just feels demeaning all over again. You know, because you're just confronted with the fact that you struggle. You know, you just... Once again, like I said, if you don't want to go to nothing I do on this show should be taken as please, please, please do this. Tell me it's good. Buy tickets. None of it. None of it. I need you to understand that. This is just, you know, my inner workings and my venting from comedy because, you know, out there it's not a safe space to criticize other comedians or to talk about how stupid the world is or, you know, how 2020 for me will not be the thing I remember from 2020 in order is COVID, lip sync, Joe Biden, in that order, in terms of how they affected my life. but you know, it's comedy is just it's this purgatory as I almost named the episode last year. Comedy purgatory sucks, and I don't. It's like I would like to leave it. And you take a risk with that because it's like, well, but what if things, but you know, it just, none of it seems to be working. So I appreciate you guys listening. I don't know if we're going to have, an episode next week. I feel like I need to take a break from this podcast and give you guys a break as well. But yes, the next two shows, the two February shows will be the last shows I do on Zoom period that aren't private gigs because, you know, it's just humbling when you just sort of expect, hey, I'm doing a show as Trump. And then you like, you make 150 tickets available and you're like, I hope people buy these. And then you're like, wait, I can't sell out of Trump tickets. And that's what like 90% of my fan base actually likes me for. And then you can't help but start to feel depressed from that. Because if the goal is to just make a couple of bucks, then hey, I'm making a couple of bucks. But if the goal is to sort of feel like you're building an infrastructure for a future career that felt impossible, it just makes it feel more impossible because you go, well, now I do have alleged fans and they're still not going to shows or buying tickets or purchasing products. And maybe that's the new comedy fan, right? They just curate it to the site that I like, you know, and that's it. And if it's not on the site I like, you know, people trust the platforms to deliver what they want. And instead of, you know, like my whole thing would be like, hey, why hasn't so-and-so posted in a while? Let me go check his page. And then I'd see that he or she had a lot of posts. And I go, oh, fuck. Let me like make sure I'm following these and like a bunch of them so that the algorithm sees me. But I feel like now people have put their trust in the platform to deliver, and the platforms don't actually do that, or at least don't always do that. But this is once again turned into depressing social media comedy talk. But I'm going to take a break from this podcast going forward because there's nothing new. There's nothing new in my career and there's nothing new to discuss. It's just week after week of frustration. So stay subscribed, I hope. And, you know, maybe I'll just take the month of February off because this is as irritating probably for you as it is for me. I just would like to be a fucking comedian or not a comedian, but I don't want to be somewhere in between. You know, getting an agent, getting some comedy independence would be good. Some comedy gigs, a future in this industry would be great. But I'm not going to spend my 40s like I did my 30s, which means hopefully when this is done, I'll have some gigs and a tour and some fans who like stand-up comedy and sketch comedy and not just anti-Trump rhetoric. It's fucking weird. But thanks for listening. I guess I'll be back in March. Let's just agree to meet back in March, and I'm going to take off for the next month from this podcast, and maybe I'll have some new news to share in March. And if I don't, then at least you'll have had a month off before I fucking talk shit some more. So enjoy your February. Enjoy Black History Month. Have a nice Valentine's Day, everybody. Like I said, shows on the 13th and the 15th. I'll put the link to tickets in the bio in the description of this show. I'm trying to think if there's anything else. Yeah, you know, there'll be some more YouTube videos, obviously, with Trump's impeachment and all the other ones I've been doing. I actually, probably my favorite one to do right now is Dave Chappelle. The MyPillow one I knew was a fucking killer once I had finished, which is why I let out a big laugh at the end of the video. But, you know, there'll be new impressions. I'll keep writing jokes and hoping against hope for you know, a brighter comedy future. But now it's time to get back to the day job that doesn't make me happy, but it doesn't constantly disappoint me either. So how about that? There's something for just being on cruise control. So have a good month. Stay safe, everybody. If you can, get those vaccines. I know my mom is getting her vaccine, her first vaccine shot this week. So that's very good news and makes me happy. And beyond that, you know, just be happy. Be fine. Find something to make you happy. Stay safe. Stay healthy. And I'll see you not next Tuesday, but, you know, in March. Bye-bye.